A reading from the book of Daniel. As I watched, thrones were set in place, and an ancient one took his throne. His clothing was white as snow, and the hair of his head was pure wool. His chariot was fiery flames, and its wheels were burning fire. A stream of fire issued and flowed out from his presence. 1,000,000 served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood attending him. The court sat in judgment, and the books were opened. As I watched in night visions, I saw one like a human being coming with the clouds of heaven. And he came to the Ancient One and was presented before him. To him was given dominion and glory and kingship, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that shall not pass away, and his kingdom is one that shall never be destroyed. From the Gospel of John. Then Pilate entered the headquarters again, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you ask this on your own, or did others tell you about me?" Pilate replied, "I am not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests have handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not from this world. If my kingdom were from this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here." Pilate asked him, "So, you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice."
My kingdom is not of this world. For I came into the world to testify to the truth. Everybody who belongs to the truth listens to my voice. Truth. This is what we all seek, isn't it? If we know the truth, all of us, the same truth, there will be justice. As the James Bay Reconciliation Team prepared this week's activities with last night's screening of Indian Horse, and the preparation of our Declaration of Territorial Acknowledgement and this worship service today, they were seeking truth. Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission received 6,750 statements from people who were irrevocably impacted by the residential school legacy. They collected 1,355 hours of recordings to uncover truth, and then made 94 recommendations for reconciliation to guide and to inspire Aboriginal peoples and settlers in a process of reconciliation and renewed relationship that are based on mutual understanding and respect. And on this, the Reign of Christ Sunday, is this not the kind of kingdom of truth that we're seeking? A kingdom of just and right relationships? Or as a First Nations blessing might say, all my relations. My hope this morning is to share with you some of my own truths, my own understanding about reconciliation and Canada's Indigenous people. And to that end, I've entitled my message, One Person's Baby Steps. And it's important to me that you keep that image of baby steps close at hand because I want to make it clear that I'm a beginner. I'm a beginner in this conversation, and I've had many teachers helping me, some of them in this room. Each step, each moment, each incident or opportunity for learning brings us closer to a clearer understanding of what happened and how it can shape our way forward. We often hear people say, difficult conversations and social challenges that, well, things are too complex. And we use the words too complex to keep us from making meaningful steps forward. We use the words too complex to excuse ourselves for being stuck where we are. And I would imagine that nothing needs to be that complex. Here's just a few snippets of short stories that have brought me to this moment. I recall a dinner conversation some 30 years ago where my mother was frustrated. "Why should we have to pay a settlement?" she said. "Why would her congregation have to chip in to a settlement fund for an injustice she felt she had nothing to do with?" My father and my older sister tried to explain to her about the horrific legacy of church-run residential schools. But for my part, I just listened. For me, it was the first time Indigenous concerns was even on my radar. Growing up in suburban Ottawa, I was only aware of First Nations people in ceremonial costumes at special events. There were no reservations nearby, no visible Indigenous people in my community, my church, or my school. And as a young adult, my experience with First Nations people in Calgary was either drunk and disorderly on the streets of downtown or in the Calgary Stampede Parade. My eldest sister, Jane Miller, works in the field of corrections. And in the 90s, she was instrumental in the visioning and design of Canada's 5 healing lodges as an alternative to conventional prisons. And with some pride, she might tell you that her work helped close the ancient and horrific prison for women in Kingston, which housed a disproportionately large number of Indigenous women. Many had been incarcerated because of domestic violence and drug-related crimes. Through following her work, I learned something about how our judicial systems were trying to deal with the challenges posed by generations of abuse, neglect, and systemic oppression. Challenges that the colonizers created and were now exacerbating by taking hurting, broken adults away from the access to the kind of healing that might have made them whole. Access to teachings and learnings and spiritual medicine that might help them answer the burning questions of who am I, of what value am I, and why am I here? The very reason we come together to worship and study our Bible here on Sunday morning. A turning point for me, an eye-opener really, was at a retirement party I attended for my brother-in-law, Fraser, who ran a national parole board office in Vancouver. I didn't know anyone and was at that awkward time of just wandering around and sharing pleasantries with people. And I saw a man, an older man, sitting in a corner, and I thought I would be generous and gracious and gift him with my time. I could make him feel comfortable while I made myself feel more comfortable. And I opened the conversation with something trite like the weather, and he responded by saying this: "I ran and hid in the forest. That's what my grandmother told me to do, and we scattered and we ran and we knew those hills and those forests and we hid well. But they kept coming back, and eventually they caught me and took me away." So I was in the presence of a First Nation elder whose work it was to help incarcerated Indigenous men work on themselves and fight with their demons while in prison and then on parole. And I was about to be schooled. For over 30 minutes, he walked me through his life as a residential school survivor. "Every day I looked in the mirror," he said, "and I've tried to tell the person in the mirror that they were okay and that I loved them. As an adult, I couldn't begin to help the men in prison and be an elder for them until I learned to love myself. Then one day it happened. I forgave myself, I forgave the people who hurt me, and I began to love myself and serve my community and help them heal. Well, that lesson has never left me, and I began to glimpse a little bit more. But the real importance of his story is now just beginning to hit home for me. Not only did this man personally suffer in the Canadian residential school systems, but equally and perhaps more importantly, his generational place was lost to his people. Because of the traumas endured, he was lost as a son, he was lost as a brother, he was lost as a father, he was lost as a friend. He was lost as a leader, and he was lost as a productive contributor. A contributor to his community, which ultimately affects generations. And while I believe that those lost generations can never be regained, there's an imperative that the work moving forward be done so that the cycle is somehow broken. In my recording studio over the last few years, I've had the privilege of working with Dana Lynn Seaborn, recording some of her original music, which she has worked on recovering her Métis history in song. And we'll hear one of those beautiful songs from her later in the service. It's called Sacred Circle. I found the care and attention that Dana took writing and reclaiming her history in poetry and in song inspiring. This year, Dana has rewritten the words to the Huron Carol, making the words more culturally appropriate and singable again, just in time for Christmas. A copy of the new words are downstairs for you, and you can have a look at them over coffee. Dana, thank you for what you've taught me in our time together and for your continued artistic work in the Métis community. Some of my learnings and moments of awareness come from beautiful, spontaneous encounters. Our families had gathered at Gorge Road Park, where Tillicum Road bridges Victoria to Esquimalt, for a picnic. So a couple of summers ago, celebrating a birthday. I pulled myself away from the bustle after dinner to drink in the summer and watch the paddlers on the gorge waterway. A young teen from the Songhees First Nation who was riding through the park stopped beside me and said hello. "It's a glorious day," I said. And he responded with, "I hope you're enjoying my backyard." I smiled. He smiled bigger. We gradually grew ear-to-ear grins. And in that moment of understanding, we were connected. Haishka, all my relations. Last year, through my daughter-in-law, Sarah, who with my son live and work in a First Nations community on the BC Northern Coast, I received an invitation to do an artist-in-residence program at Lachlan School in Kitkatla, which is part of the Gitxsan First Nation. It was a huge, challenging, scary opportunity for me. And the James Bay United Church Board thought carefully about whether they could release me from my responsibilities here for 6 weeks. The board thought that perhaps the opportunity for learning wasn't just for me, but was an opportunity for our congregation, and you graciously sent me on my way with rich and heartfelt blessings and instructions to bring back some of what I had experienced. It goes without saying that although I was going to teach a music program to grades kindergarten to 12 and engage the community at large in participating in musical activities, it was I who was going to receive the education. The community is remote and isolated, and I learned from the elected chief that back in the day, storytelling timelines seem not to have specific dates associated with them. Back in the day, when the patrols came to ensure that the laws that banned Native spiritual practices were adhered to. Posted lookouts could see the boats coming from miles away. This enabled them to quickly stow their regalia, hide their spiritual practices before they were found out. This story was shared with me with pride that they were able to maintain some of the old ways for some of the time. I can't imagine what it'd be like here to have to rush and pack this all up and take down the cross for fear that somebody was going to come through the door. I learned the difference between tribal historical elders and elected band councils. In some First Nations, these two governing bodies, one traditional and one imposed, are often in opposition to each other. Thankfully, in Kitkatla, the band council and the hereditary work closely together, and I was able to see that in action at a time of crisis. When a case of booze, was discovered being smuggled onto this officially dry reserve. They held community meetings. They ceremonially poured out the bottles onto the land, and they formed circle for the community to discuss their concerns about bootlegging and drug dealers that plagued the community, much like they plagued the community here. I learned that most of the children have never been exposed to the sound of song from their parents or their parents' parents. What I grew up with in my home was silent there. Children were having to find their voice for the first time. And the teachers' aides in the classroom were either unable or afraid or ashamed or self-conscious. It was mine to wonder about. Afraid to open their mouths to try to vocalize any singing sounds. My work in that area is actually part of an evening presentation with pictures that I would hope to share at some time in the future. When I invited the men and women of the community to come and sing and play guitar with me in the evening at the community center, I met a man who sat down with me and his guitar. We greeted, we tuned our instruments. I asked him what he wanted to sing, and he said something that floored me. I'm 58 years old, and I've cut down 16 in my life here on the island. I didn't understand. I cut down my first one when I was 14 years old. And I'm starting to see a horrific story unfolding. This man, my age, has had to cut down 16 of his friends and family from trees where they had hung themselves to escape the pain of living. We talked. We sang. We cried. We listened. And for a time, we were friends. During the summer, I started an acquaintance, which has developed into a friendship, with an old one. And she calls herself Old One. It's what she prefers to the colonial label of elder. So, Old One, Joan Morris. She's been gently teaching me and encouraging me to see more and more about generational trauma as it specifically refers, in her case, to Indian hospitals, something we don't hear as much about. She treats me with gentleness, as you might imagine a grandmother at her best can muster. And when I forget something from a previous conversation, she says again and raises her hand, "Remember, Gordon. Remember last time, Gordon." And I'm learning that each story of each Aboriginal person is different. Each experience of loss, shame, anger, redemption, and healing is unique. There is no one Indian story. Last night, in conversation with Eddie Charlie of Every Child Matters, Eddie shared this idea with me. Two very different cultures collided in our collective past. And the collision has left us all terribly broken. The only thing to be done is for us to come back together to heal. In my last few days at Kit Kat, I walked again with the chief of the band council and I asked him for advice. "My congregation will want to know," I said, "what can we be doing towards reconciliation?" "You're here, Gordon," he said. "You're doing it. Tell your people, if they're listening and learning and creating space to hear and tell the truth, then they'll be walking a path of reconciliation. May it be so. Amen."
It's a poem by Rebecca Tabobandan. We are waking up our history from a forced slumber. We are breathing it into our lungs so it will be part of us again. It will make us angry at first because we will see how much you stole from us. And for how long you watched us suffer. We will see how you see us and how, when we copied your ways, we killed our own. We will cry and cry and cry because we can never be the same again. But we will go home to cry, and we will see ourselves in this huge mess, and we will gently whisper the circle back. And it will be old, and it will be new. Then we will breathe our history back to you. You will feel how strong and alive it is, and you will feel yourself become a part of it. And it will shock you at first, because it is too big to see all at once. And you won't want to believe it. You will see how you see us, and all the disaster in your ways, and how much we lost. And you will cry, and cry, and cry, because we can never be the same again. But we will cry with you, and we will see ourselves in this huge mess, and we will gently whisper the circle back. And it will be old, and it will be new.